This is United Tribes News Radio. Insights into Native culture, people, ideas, topics, to improve understanding. From United Tribes Technical College in Bismarck. A study about America's unhealthiest counties found that a county in North Dakota was mentioned as not only the unhealthiest county in the state, but the unhealthiest county in the United States. It happens to be on a federally recognized Indian reservation. But to be fair, six other counties in the U.S. that are on that list are also on Indian reservations. In this program, Native Health, more specifically, diabetes and cardiovascular disease. Why are these diseases so prevalent in Native communities? According to the Center for Disease Control, there are three main types of diabetes: type 1, type 2, and gestational diabetes, which is diabetes while pregnant. With type 1, your body can't make insulin, so you need to take insulin every day. And this is not the most common type of diabetes. That's type 2, where your body doesn't use insulin well and is unable to keep blood sugar at normal levels. More than 29 million people in the United States have diabetes. One out of four don't know they have it. Those with risk factors should be tested. Diabetes touches nearly every Native American person, either as part of a personal battle for health or among family and friends. Health agencies and medical professionals are researching new cures for diabetes every day. The best are based on education and early prevention. Health agencies are also addressing the factors that contribute to the high rates of diabetes in Native American communities. 24/7 Wall Street reviewed county-level health rankings from County Health Rankings and Roadmaps, a Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute joint program, and found several counties on the list are on Indian reservations. Fremont County in Wyoming, home to Wind River. Glacier County in Montana, home to the Blackfeet Nation. McKinley County in New Mexico, home of several tribes like the Navajo, Zuni, and Pueblo. Apache County, Arizona, home to the Navajo, Apache, and Zuni. Monoman County in Minnesota, White Earth, home to the Chippewa. And in South Dakota, it's Todd County on the Rosebud Reservation. Topping the list from our state, North Dakota, it's in Sioux County, which ranks number one as the least healthiest county in the entire U.S. It has the highest obesity rate and an extremely high rate of diabetes. You can find out more about this study by searching at 24/7 Wall Street, least healthiest counties in the U.S. Dr. Spiro Manson, who descends from the Pemina Band of Chippewa, was born at Turtle Mountain in North Dakota and is a distinguished professor of public health and psychiatry. He directs the Centers for American Indian and Alaska Native Health and serves as Associate Dean of Research in the Colorado School of Public Health at the University of Colorado, Denver, and Schultz Medical Center. He spoke at United Tribes about this very topic and how it's so prevalent in the Native communities. He delivered his presentation in a symposium full of faculty and staff. Dr. Manson has published 200 articles on the assessment, treatment, and prevention of physical, alcohol, drug, as well as mental health problems of Native people. He has won numerous awards and is widely acknowledged as one of the nation's leading authorities in regard to Indian and Native health. In his talk, he shares results of a study, one with a surprising ending in diabetes prevention.
Good morning. I'm most pleased to be able to come here and be with you. I've been here on campus a couple of times in the past, but I'm most pleased to be able to follow in this theme of health and wellness. So important. What I'd like to do today is share with you the results of our work nationwide, and I use that word our to include all of us in Indian and Native communities, because this is cutting-edge work demonstrating several things. It demonstrates that we are able to take scientifically demonstrated approaches into this particular case to preventing diabetes among our people, and showing the way to others, Native and non-Native, about that journey. What do we know about diabetes in our communities? We know that the rate of diabetes for adults eligible for service through IHS was 16% in 2009. That's more than double our counterparts in the general population. And for those of us who are diabetic, the most serious complication of diabetes is cardiovascular disease in a variety of forms, ranging all the way from stroke to increased blood pressure and hypertension and the like. Diabetes is extremely costly to the Indian Health Service. It is extremely costly to us as individuals. It is extremely costly to the systems of care that are available to us. We did a study with the Phoenix Indian Medical Center in Arizona, which demonstrated that 11% of their total patient caseload over a two-year period were individuals who suffered from diabetes. They consumed 37%, over three times the extent to which they were represented in that service population, the total health care dollars available, not just for treating diabetes, but for all illnesses. An unbelievably high rate of consumption as a consequence of diabetes, which is, again, twice what we see the rate of the expenditure in the general population. Now, the special diabetes program for Indians began in 1998, mandated by the U.S. Congress. It recognized our senators and representatives were convinced by advocates from our communities that, in fact, diabetes then was epidemic and has become increasingly so. Given that, they were willing to make an investment, and they were encouraged in this investment to start out in focusing on increasing the awareness of diabetes in our communities. You know, I don't know about you, but I go among my family. I'm the eldest of four boys. My three younger brothers are all diabetic. What are some of the things? Can I have a show of hands? How many of you are diabetic? About 10 or 12 of you. How many of you know somebody within your family or close-knit friends or who are diabetic? Just look around you. About 75 to 80% of us. Diabetes and its consequences and its presence in our immediate lives, either personally or through the friends and family, is a part of our daily life experience. What are some of the things that either you or your family members say about diabetes? Anybody ever said, oh, you know, it's inevitable. It's in our genes. I'm Indian. I'm likely to be diabetic. You often hear that. You know, when I was growing up, I was always amazed at the, what we call euphemisms, the ways that we would talk about, you know, this Hispanic comedian, Gabriel Iglesias, I'm not fat, I'm fluffy. Well, I don't know about you, but I grew up getting husky genes. I'll never forget going, you know, the various stores and, you know, I didn't get the slim fits. I didn't get the regulars. We'd go for the, well, I didn't get the full cut. I got the husky jeans. So I remember, so that notion of I'm fluffy really strikes a chord with me. And part of what we've believed for decades is that's just a natural part of who we are. And so being fluffy, being husky, being full figured is a part of how we have come to accept as a part of who we are in our communities and what we're likely to become. Well, the consequences of that are enormous. And it speaks to the lack of awareness and the information that we have about the truth of that, the inevitability of that, and the consequences of being husky. And so what the Special Diabetes Program for Indians did initially when it began in 1998 is realize that in our communities, we needed to engage in an active education campaign about obesity and the risk of diabetes. And so for the first 5 years, from 1998 through 2002, the congressional funds went to support this Special Diabetes Program for Indians, SDPI, funded through the Indian Health Service. And the primary focus at that point in time was on education awareness, and largely through convening group meetings like this, through posters and flyers, through special gatherings and a variety of sort, and beginning to talk about this. You know, not unlike alcohol, not unlike abuse, which are very what we call stigmatizing conditions, you know, we don't like to talk about them. It doesn't make you feel particularly good. So too, there has been historically a lot of stigma and a lot of resistance to talking about obesity, about being fluffy, about being husky and the consequences thereof. So in that first 5 years of the initiative, the focus was on awareness and education about the risk factors associated with diabetes. Now, in the diabetes program, there are 36 grantees across the country. There are over 90 tribal communities that have been participating in the diabetes prevention program since 2003. And what I have to share is their success story. So the diabetes prevention program, the one of the two arms, took an evidence-based practice. Evidence-based means that there is a body of scientific evidence that demonstrates and justifies the effectiveness of a particular practice, program, or policy. In this case, the evidence that was used and rolled out to these 36 grantees and the some 80 to 90 tribal programs and communities that participated was developed by the National Institutes of Health. The National Institutes of Health is the leading cutting-edge agency funded by the federal government located back in Bethesda, Maryland, that is charged with developing the knowledge base and developing guidelines for the application of these knowledge base to a variety of health problems, ranging all the way from alcoholism to diabetes and everything in between. Now, the National Institutes of Health funded what was called an efficacy trial. This is a very tightly controlled scientific study that is designed to test, under the most optimal conditions, ways to treat or prevent various kinds of health conditions. It was funded by one of their institutes called the National Institute of Diabetes, Digestive, and Kidney Disease, NIDDK. And it was called a Diabetes Prevention Program, the DPP. The DPP was done with 2,000 people across the country. There were three Indian communities that participated in that study. They were all from the Southwest. They totaled about 161 Indian people from those three communities who participated in the study. Basically, the DPP found that it's possible to prevent type 2 diabetes. This is what we're focusing on, is type 2 diabetes, typically adult onset, although in Indian and Native communities, is very much a part of youth as well. And in that study, the goal was a 7% weight loss, to increase physical activity, such as illustrated in the strengthening lifestyle intervention discussed earlier, to at least a minimum of 150 minutes a week, and to improve the way in which we eat. Now, the diabetes prevention program was demonstrated to be effective in the general population. But the question is, was it effective, and can it be effective in Indian and Native communities? The answer was, in this very tightly controlled scientific study, among those 161 Indian and Native people, yes, it was as effective, for the most part, as the other 2,000 participants. So the question is, if we take this prevention approach, demonstrated now in highly controlled, well-resourced settings, can we roll it out into the real world? Can we roll it out and will it be as successful in institutions like this, or in Boys and Girls Clubs, or in the IHS clinics, or the urban Indian programs, where things can't be as controlled as tightly? And that was the question for us. Ultimately, we recruited and enrolled at the beginning of this, what we'll call a trial, out in the real world, 3,400 plus Indian and Native people from across all those different communities. And their progress was assessed at baseline, that is when they were enrolled into the program, assessed again within 30 days after they completed the program, and then annually for 1 year, 2 year, and 3 years. And just to give you a sense that at the completion of the intensive lifestyle curriculum that represented the intervention, 72% of the individuals who were originally enrolled completed it. We were able to follow up with 58% 1 year later, almost 50% 2 years later, and a little over 43% 3 years later. So giving us a longer-term look at the gains and impacts of this intervention. The program used resources in a variety of ways that varied from one community to the next to make available and to make easier participation in exactly the kinds of physical activities that were described and that are part of the Strengthening the Lifestyle program, so that schools would be opened early morning, late evening. Physical education facilities would be made available to the individual participants and their family members for from individualized weightlifting or strengthening programs or basketball or volleyball like here and everything in between. It also included what are called booster sessions. We called them class reunions every 6 months, where the participants who completed this lifestyle balance intervention would come back together. And they would typically come back together in a series of cooking classes where the program would provide them, pay for the cost of all of the foodstuffs, but the individual participant or small groups of participants who host it in their homes would prepare it. And then they would move from one home to the other every 6 months. And of course, the intent was to reinforce the lessons learned during the 16-session intervention. There are also community activities, lots of them. You have them going on around here, and we certainly do in our reservation communities. Health fairs, walks, spirit walks, a variety of different kinds of things, limited only by the imagination and creativity of the people in these communities, which is vast. Just to give you a sense, 67% of the people who were enrolled attended all 16 sessions. That's actually really remarkable. And it's because the typical rates of retention of attending all of these kinds of sessions in something like this is around 30 to 40%. So this was over double what the typical experience is. How was that achieved? It was achieved by the lifestyle coaches from those communities coming out, like the three individuals here in the earlier presentation, and going to people where they're at home, seeing them in store, the post office, at school, at a local event, and encourage them and keeping their attendance up and keeping them motivated. So these after core or after program activities were really critical to keeping people engaged, to helping them continue to problem solve the ways in which they could apply the knowledge they'd learned. You won't see this, but we found that women lost as much weight as did men, but women were ultimately less likely to keep that weight off. And why? Stress? Absolutely. They're the cooks. Gee, Mom, we think it's really great that you're in this program. You're looking good. A couple weeks later, I don't like anything green. Mom, you should cook this stuff for yourself, but I ain't going to eat it. So women, by virtue of being the cooks, receive an enormous amount of pushback after a honeymoon period from family members about their attempts to eat more healthfully. And so those kinds of after-core activities are really important to helping the participants, men as well as women, keep that weight off. Well, how effective was this intervention in the final analysis? I've already mentioned that Congress required that it be evaluated, and we looked at both what are called process outcomes, how well did the programs do in implementing this lifestyle balance curriculum? Congress wanted to know about outcomes, where the rubber hits the road. What did we see in terms of weight loss? What did we see in terms of blood glucose levels? What did we see in terms of healthy eating habits? And so we, together with the programs, developed a pretty sophisticated evaluation design that basically that at the time of recruitment in the program and thus the baseline assessment of the individual participants and then the offering of the 16 classes or sessions, the immediate follow-up, and then the annual assessments each year were very extensive assessments of body, of weight, behavioral, psychosocial factors. And this is one of the reasons why the treatment of diabetes is so costly, is because being diabetic and on that pathway to being diabetic introduces all of these other kinds of physical health problems that require treatment and that have costs associated with them. Now, they had a control group, what they called a placebo group. All they got was a brochure, and they were followed over time. And then we compared our participants to both of those. The bottom line is that the DPP, in this very rigorous scientific form, reduced the risk of diabetes by 57%. That's really remarkable, reducing the risk of diabetes by 57%. Where did the Special Diabetes Program for Indians Diabetes Prevention participants fall? They matched the 57% reduction in incident diabetes that was evident and found in the original trial. That original trial spent an average $1,800 per participant. The special diabetes program for Indians spent about $450 per participant and got the same kinds of outcomes for 4,400 Indian and Native people across the country with far less rigor and control asserted over it. That is really remarkable, unbelievable. It has few parallels in the history of prevention trials in the United States. Something else, and this is a really complicated thing I'm not going to go into in detail, it's called a diabetes risk score. It's out of a study in Framingham done in the East Coast about 20 years ago. And basically what it does is it takes a variety of risk factors, whether it's, you know, prenatal history of diabetes, whether it's BMI, whether it's triglycerides or other lipid factors, and assigns them points and basically allows us to do an estimate of the risk that an individual faces for converting to diabetes within an 8-year period of time. Now, almost 20% at baseline at the start of this of the 4,000 of the 3,400 participants in the SDPI had a risk score of 20. I misspoke. A risk score of 19.6 dropped to 16.7 overall for all of the participants. That's a difference of nearly 3 points. Within 16 sessions, roughly 2 months of participating in this program, the participants regained 6 years of their possible productive life lived. 6 years of life sort of recaptured a possibility. This is comparable to what you see with rates of smoking cessation. That if somebody who has smoked for 20 years, one or more packs a day, quits, the likelihood of their increased longevity is similar to this. And I'm pleased to tell you that there are hundreds of success stories that are just the same among the 3,500 other Indian and Native people who participated in this program. You know, often in our communities, we follow behind other segments of the U.S. society in terms of for figuring things out. This work by your sister communities, and in fact, there are several programs here in North Dakota that are participating, is really blazing the way, not only for other tribal communities, but all people in the United States. This special diabetes program for Indians is now looked to as a flagship for how to do this in the real world. So as those three individuals up here were encouraging you to consider the strengthening lifestyles intervention that they described, just get it started. Just take a risk. Even if you're a husky or fluffy, it's wonderful because nobody's going to laugh at you. Nobody's going to laugh at you. They're going to have the kind of support and encouragement that will get you started down this path. Because your children want you to do that, because you are likely to live longer in a more successful and functional way if you do that. And I'm here to tell you that professionally and personally. Thank you.
Dr. Spiro Manson. He makes his home in Colorado. He's a professor of public health and psychiatry, and among other distinguished titles, he's an author and speaker. Encouraging Healthier Lifestyles with Encouraging Facts from a diabetes study in 2009, emphasizing that education and an active lifestyle is the way to prevention and a cure. This program was produced by United Tribes Technical College, Office of Public Information. Dennis Newman, director. Alicia Heglin-Thorpe, producer. This series is designed not only to strengthen our communities, but to give insight and understanding of a tribal culture and a Native people. For more information, visit our website, uttc.edu.